The idea is instead of going and extending a ton of capital to buy properties, you can actually just partner with landowners and have a skill set to find the best and highest use for that property. And then through maybe a little bit of civil engineering, rezoning, subdivision, any number of ways in which you can force appreciation onto a property, you can actually give that landowner above market value for their property, and you can make a substantial profit with much smaller investment, much less risk.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Logan Swanson is a husband, father, and also a land investor. Logan, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely, Logan. The pleasure is mine. There are three questions I ask every guest who comes on the show. In 90 seconds or less, can you tell me where did you start, where are you now, and how did you get there?
Well, I started with a $2,000 loan in 2018 to go buy some vacant desert squares in the middle of nowhere in Texas, Nevada. we've moved that now, grown it from just flipping vacant land to developing properties, funding other land investment deals. And now our main focus is trying to combine all the pieces together into something that's driving a little bit more purpose in my life.
That is really cool. I love that. I know for those of you that are listening to this show, and I know I've mentioned this, I think only one other time out of the 800 and something episodes, is that I always ask guests a fun fact or a surprising view. Sometimes we incorporate those here into the show. For those of you who are listening, Logan, I think it was in 2018, your fun fact or surprising view says you started, like you said, there was a $2,000 loan. But when you started, you were a construction project manager by day and a high-end restaurant server by night. And, yeah, you know, through just sounds like grit and perseverance, you have really built your business to where it is today.
Yeah. And with my wife, she's my business partner. And as much as I was burning the midnight oil, she was too.
Man, that's really cool. I love it. So you took that $2,000 loan. You were buying desert squares, which from what I understand, correct me why I'm wrong, in the land investing space, that's kind of like that's the riskier way of investing in land. No, or tell me about it.
Yeah, so I mean, effectively, it's investment like anything else. You buy as cheap as possible, and then you resell it. There are risks to every investment, right? But it's the least risky because they're so cheap. When I was started, you know, I was buying 5-acre properties in West Texas for $500, $700, and selling them for $5,000, $7,000.
Who wants those? I mean, what's the like? If you're buying 5 acres for 500, I mean, that's astounding. Like, what is it? It's got to be high desert, just no water.
Yeah. Yeah, it is rough. It is rough. But there's a buyer for every piece of land. I don't think nothing has sat on my inventory longer than a year. So you might have to get creative with how you sell it. But, you know, there's this American intuition that says, I want to own a piece of America. And actually, it exists out of this country as well. They want to own a piece of America. And for folks that don't have a lot of money, you know, $5,000, we owner financed a lot of land back then. So it was like $100 down, $100 a month, and you could start owning a piece of America. And shoot, if you went out there once a year and drove ATVs around, it'd be worth it.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Undoubtedly. That's really crazy. So obviously, you're not buying 5-acre desert squares anymore for $500 and flipping it for $5,000, which is not a bad return on investment, by the way. I mean,
no,
if it didn't take any time, I'd do that once a month and still be happy about it. But
sure, yeah,
you know, I mean, it's better than a sharp stick in the eye. But either way, what does your business look like today?
So today, I mean, this year we launched our funding company, which has been the main focus. So I've done a lot of flips kind of all over the country. And what that's given me is a skill set to underwrite land flips, which is a pretty, you know, small demographic of people who can underwrite land deals anywhere in the country and quickly evaluate risks and retail value. So our funding company was just really new to me. It's strictly financial, whereas before, you know, there's a little bit more of a, I don't know. It's very different. I'm not like a button up suit and tie guy. So getting into something that's like much more banking than it is investing was a big change of pace for me. So we spent the year kind of building and developing that. And my goal is to try to, you know, 5X or 10X it this year. And we're well underway. You know, you're in Tennessee. We just funded a $1.9 million development in Tennessee.
Gotcha. Why is now a strategic time to pivot your business out of buying and reselling land and now into the financing of land acquisitions and sales?
Well, it's beautiful because we are actually still kind of just doing the same thing. You know, when we fund a deal, we actually take title and then we're signing a marketing agreement with the person that brought us the deal. So they effectively get a marketing agreement with either a profit share or a fixed rate payout to us once the property is sold. I love it now because it just allows me to own more land all over the place and have someone else do the selling for me and find the deals. So where my business was stymied in the past was, how do I regularly find and buy 5, 10, 15 undervalued properties a month? When I could just, you know, have access to the funding and the structure to do it myself. And we make less money per deal, but I mean, it's still nothing to sneeze at.
Well, for sure. But you, so unlike traditional funding, this is not a strictly debt play. It sounds like you guys are both debt and taking
and JV.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. It's more of a, like you said, it's a joint venture. Okay. Okay. That's really cool. And so have you shut down your marketing arm of your own land deals to really focus on growing this side of the business? You're doing both still.
Yeah. So it's actually one of the benefits of my company is, since I have kind of this huge buyers list and the strong marketing force, when people work with me to fund their deals, they also get the benefits of all that stuff. And you know, we're pretty well established in certain areas. So I kind of operate on a calendar. I go back to the same areas again and again and scoop deals and sell them. And my second year I went nuts. You know, I was buying land all over the country and it just became this train wreck. So now it's like, I only work in Texas. I only work in these few counties. And it's much more repeatable and delegatable. So that's what we do.
Right. And it sounds like those were some of the mistakes maybe in the early years that you made was kind of going too broad.
Yeah. So, I mean, when we started 2018, we had a lot of success just doing these desert squares. And then the next year we were like, let's move closer to home. So we started going to markets outside of DFW, Dallas Fort Worth, that's where I'm from. And there was not a lot of competition in our industry. So we were kind of sweeping through neighborhoods. We were buying properties for, you know, a home, like a Lakeview lot for $1,000, $2,000 and selling it for $15,000, $20,000 cash, you know, within weeks.
Right.
And you know, my head just blew up. I thought I was a genius. It was really just circumstantial. And I was kind of first to the party in a lot of ways, but so my head got full of all these crazy ideas. And for some reason, my second year, my goal became to own land in every state. And I just went nuts. And yeah, it's easy to operate efficiently in one market. It's almost impossible to operate efficiently in 15, 20, 30 markets.
Man, there is a lot of wisdom packed into that. And I think that's also funny, the point you made there about how you can mistake your success for, oh, I'm a genius. Mm-hmm. And it's really just market forces that for whatever reason, you're at the right place at the right time. And having the insight to spot the difference is, I think, what a lot of people are experiencing right now in commercial real estate.
Yeah. Insight or my head was slammed against the wall. It's like hard to miss, you know?
Right. Well, there's that too. But I mean, I think it's also, you know, being able to go, hey, you know what? We just hit a home run because we were just in the right spot at the right time. Or you're like, man, this is the undiscovered new way to do everything. And then you go all in and you find out that, like, no, actually it was just the right place at the right time. And
yeah,
now your hat is in your hand going, nah, what did I do wrong again? So,
right.
That's, and I think we're seeing that. I mean, we're seeing that in multifamily. We're seeing that in some overbought asset classes where it's like, oh, you know, people thought they were just, you know, geniuses in the commercial real estate space. And it's like, no, you just had a 10-year run of incredibly cheap debt and an appetite, a buyer's appetite that was just, you know, unsuppressed. So,
mm-hmm.
And then that's slowing down. So it's an interesting time to be. Well, let's talk a little bit about the different ways you are investing in land. We've had maybe, I don't know, 5 or 7 people over the course of this life of this show come on and talk about land. We've talked about, you know, buying Desert Squares a little bit. We've talked a little bit about just the, you know, buy it and resell it, the flipping land process. We've talked about people that have come on and all they do is infill lots. And I think that's probably by and large it, but it sounds like you've got a new spin or a different way that you're approaching the land investing business. So I'd love to hear about that.
Yeah. So I'll preface it by saying I did not invent any of these strategies. You know, I feel like in most industries, there's this natural progression, sometimes stupidly, to just keep moving on to the next thing, shiny object syndrome. And, you know, the lesson learned from working all over the place back in 2019 was like, how can I do the exact opposite, you know, shrink and work in a small area? So one of the strategies we've done is development plays, or really just subdivision plays, where you, in Texas and a lot of other areas that have a lot of private land, there's very few restrictions or even processes built around subdividing land up to 10 acres. So we would go through and buy, you know, 130, 150 acres worth of land, maybe a little below retail, not even shopping for a huge discount. But then you bring in some civil engineers, you design a little bit of a subdivision, maybe do a little road and power work, and you can double the value of that property just in the subdivision. And then instead of marketing all over the country, you're just marketing a bunch of properties in the exact same location. You know, you're working with one broker, one title company, all that sort of stuff. So we really like those. We're actively pursuing those. We have another wing that's kind of focused on entitlement projects, which is unique to me and something I'm still dipping my toes in here. But the idea is, instead of going and extending a ton of capital to buy properties, you can actually just partner with landowners and have a skill set to find the best and highest use for that property. And then through maybe a little bit of civil engineering, rezoning, subdivision, any number of ways in which you can force appreciation onto a property, you can actually give that landowner above market value for their property. And you can make a substantial profit with much smaller investment, much less risk. So like kind of an example of that would be, say, you know, we like Tyler, Texas. That's where we're shopping right now. There's people who have, you know, a 10 acre tract of land that's, there's three apartment complexes in the vicinity nearby. This has all the right utilities and everything running to it. But right now it's just a big square with a bunch of trees on it. So, you know, we partner with them and say, hey, we'll establish a buy price on this of $1.1 million. And here's what we're going to do. You're going to give us 6 months. We're going to get our engineers and surveyors out here. We're going to design the best and highest layout for an apartment complex that, you know, it jives with the city. They get all their approvals, and then we bring it to market as this package for an apartment complex. But we haven't picked up a shovel. All we've done is the paperwork. Maybe some surveyors in the field, and we could maybe spend $50,000 doing that entitlement work and add maybe $300,000 to $400,000 worth of value. So the landowner's happy; they get $1.1 million when they might have gotten $900,000 as is, and we can walk away with a $250,000 profit with $50,000 invested. Those are kind of the strategies, and there's endless sorts of opportunities like that from subdivision. There's all sorts of ways to do it, but the beauty is just seeing the property, doing some analysis. You know, you can do this in the commercial space, rezone a residential property to a commercial property, add a ton of value that way, and then all you do is bring it to market. So the idea is, like, I don't want anyone with shovels out there. I just want paperwork, and I want to add value.
Right. That business plan is incumbent upon there being a healthy construction market, or, you know, people still looking for things to build, construction, you know, subdivisions, multifamily complexes, things like that. Is that a risk that you try to calculate when looking at that? I mean,
yeah, you do your homework. You know, you get on the phone with brokers and agents in the area. We actually have sort of a process behind it. Okay, I'm going to get my acquisition manager on the phone. She's going to call 10 to 15 brokers. She's going to ask them all the same questions and weigh their opinions. So what we're going to be asking is, like, what's the demand right now? Right. You know, what out of state money is trying to come into this market, and what are they pursuing? Things like that. And they'll kind of tell us, they'll give us a roadmap and say, hey, this is the need. If you brought this sort of development to market, or this sort of entitled property to market, there is a buyer pool waiting. So you do that homework ahead of time. And then, yeah, obviously you just try to focus on a fast growing area. And DFW is just really like, there's a triangle in Texas between Houston, Dallas, and Austin where you can't miss.
Right. Right. Understood. Have you gotten all the way through that process on any property and found out that you couldn't move it?
No, not yet. So this is, like I said, something we're dipping our toes into. This is more of a new learned skill set. We're in our third month of trying to put one of these deals together. We're much more familiar with kind of the standard subdivision, which, you know, those are the ones that we like to do on a regular basis. But yeah, this is a whole new thing for us, but we are in a community where we've seen it done many times. Right. So I'm confident that it will work.
Why do you think that developers don't just go out and do this on their own?
Well, I mean, developers are usually the ones that benefit from it. So if you think about, like, there's certain size companies, right? So there's the huge companies that have their own internal organization, you know, Lennar Homes and things like that. It's all in house.
Right.
But most of the time, they're actually a little smaller than that. So if you have some development company that, say, is good at building two or three apartment complexes a year, or two or three strip malls or something like that a year, they may be really good on the construction side, but they don't have the wing or the arm that's going to source the deals. They just wait for the market. They wait for a broker or a realtor to call them and say they have a deal. So what we're doing is we're filling that initial step. We're bringing to market the deal that makes it very easy for them. Like, the idea is to be shovel ready.
Right.
So a lot of that work's done. The city's already approved the plans. They can just start building.
How often do, once the plans are approved, does that developer want to come in and make changes?
Yeah, I mean, it's regular, right? So there is a process with the city that's going to allow them to amend the plans. But a really well-executed entitlement deal, you know, if you're developing an apartment complex, for example, the city is going to give you restrictions. They're going to say, okay, well, you need ingress and egress here. You're going to need this much green space. You can only build this high. Once you add all those variables in, it's more of a math equation than it is like a stylistic design application, because most builders can be like, I just want as many units as I can get. So then you kind of build a site plan that's optimized for the number of units. And then, yeah, maybe they say, hey, I want different cladding or whatever, but that's not even what we do. We're just getting the site plan. So this is going to be the layout of the development. And then all your architectural decisions can be done from there.
That's cool, man. I like that. It is a different approach. Yes. To the, and of course, obviously it's not a new approach by any stretch, but it's certainly a different approach to what we see a lot of land investors doing. Let's talk about the finances side of what you are doing. I know inside of your funding arm, I'll call it that, or maybe it's a separate funding company, you guys are going in both. It sounds like you're providing all of the capital to close the deal. And of course, you know, in exchange for that, it's a joint venture. You guys have both the debt and the kind of the equity positions inside of it. How are you doing that? Are you bringing investors in? Are you self-funding all of this? What's that look like?
Yeah. So right now my business partner is the funding. He's got some really nice lines of credit that he's got a decent rate. I mean, as good as you can get today. And we've built the company, actually, we designed for outside capital. We've just put him in as the outside capital for now, until we got to a point where we're either overextended with how much he can supply, or we just get really ambitious and say we need to hold some funds on hand, or we have so many applications, he's not going to keep digging into his own account for it. But it's actually very easy to understand from an outside lender's perspective. We do not take like large chunks of capital and then deploy them at later dates. Anytime money would come into our business, it's going to be put into a specific deal.
Right.
So an outside investor could even do a little bit of the risk analysis with us. We can show them why we like the deal, why we're funding it, why we agreed to the retail value. And then internally, it's really simple. It starts at 6% return on investment, and that goes up 1% each month that the property is not sold. So it's not a bad deal. Most of our deals are going to sell between 3 and 6 months, and that money can get put back in. So we've actually been tracking the annualized return of my business partner just from putting his money in, and it's pretty wild. And for us, it's honestly considered pretty easy money. That's one of the reasons I'm talking to a lot of folks that are outside of our space, is there is way more opportunity than capital. So the people that are inside providing capital, such as myself, even though I have kind of the best rates for what we do, it's still really expensive. So like whether it be working through my funding company or another person's, there's like way more deals than there is capital right now.
Right. That's really awesome. I love what you're doing. Let's talk here. The last few minutes we have, let's talk a little bit about team. Cause it sounds like you have gone from, again, just rewind a few short years ago, busting your backside, serving food at a high end restaurant at night, to now having a pretty good sized team working with you. Tell me the secrets to how you've built out that team and kind of what the various roles are.
Yeah. So the beautiful part is small team. Okay. So I have kind of these different ventures, but they all effectively do the same thing. It's all just looking at land deals, underwriting it, and then managing transactions.
Right.
The rest of it is kind of automated. It's like Excel spreadsheet formulas. So for me, in lieu of having like secretaries and things like that, I just have a really well-built system. You know, I have CRMs, I have people that book on my calendars. right now, most of what I do is just underwriting, which this year I'm hoping to hire an underwriter. But my team's really small. You know, I have a couple VAs that are operating for me. I have a marketing company that's third party that I employ. Then I have my contractors, right? So I just have people who are going to do work for me, but they're not employees. And then I have one acquisition manager. And based off of the volume of deals that we're currently doing, she's plenty. And she's not even full-time with us. You know, if we're managing, say, 10, 15, 20 transactions a month, that's like 4 hours a day for her.
Wow.
So the beauty of like these different businesses or entities is they all just kind of stack. And I found the right people who can just fill in the holes. And I have myself, my business partner, and my wife, who's also my business partner. And that's pretty much the team.
Wow. That's cool. What about goals for the company? Like what's your next big thing and why?
Yeah. So, you know, I have a few different companies and the goals are all kind of outlined in each one. One of them, my flipping company, I want it on a calendar. And I want that be effectively delegated entirely. Right now it isn't, it was kind of paused. It was bigger than it was. Then I shrunk it down while I focused on other ventures. So, getting that right is pretty big. I have this marketing company where I just market and sell land for other investors. And same thing, I want that to be relatively autonomous. And I've done a lot of that. You know, we paid for a lot of automation to get most of the processes done for us. And then my marketing company carries the heavy lifting in that. For my funding company, you know, we did, you know, well over $1 million last year in our first year, but you know, we're already $3 million in this year and we're trying to get to like maybe $5 or $10 million there, which would be pretty big for us. And then I just want to do one or two developments a year. And I think that would keep me pretty busy.
Right. No, that's cool. One thing I love that I feel like, I'm putting words in your mouth here, but that, and this comes out of a thought from, a book I just read called Profit First, you know, where he says one of the mistakes that people make is they just get big for big's sake. Like there's this kind of visceral inclination that entrepreneurs have where it's like, well, dude, we did 10 million last year. We should do 100 million next year. He's like, yeah, but are you happy with 10 million this year? And is your lifestyle good? And like, is that balance? And so I think what I hear you saying is like, hey, you know what? We're going to be strategic about the way we grow. And it sounds like it's going to fit your guys' lifestyle as much as it is your monetary and kind of income goals.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the flipping business, for example, forever we were like, how can we grow this? How can we grow this? And we just found that the more we grew it, the less we loved it, the more burdensome it would get. So I actually outlined as like, I want to do 5 flips a month. You know, I really just, I want to have 5 properties in standing inventory, but I want them to fit the following criteria. You know, I have to make, you know, a triple digit profit on each one. And I need it to be in an area where it'll move within 6 months. And I need it to be sold and marketed by either my automated systems or my broker so that it's just no weight on me. So really it's like, how do I take each of these things and compartmentalize them in such a way that I don't really want to work more than a couple hours a day. I know that I want to do other things that are productive, but as far as like land industry business, I don't want to be dedicating my whole life to it. And that's why the funding company is the best one to focus on because it's so scalable. Really, it's a transaction manager, eventually a full-time underwriter, And then, you know, I'll probably be just shaking hands and getting the deals funded.
That's awesome. Logan, thank you for taking the time to come on the show today. I certainly appreciate it. I always love talking talking land and land development. Everything you've talked about today is something it's a topic I enjoy. So thank you very much for taking the time to share with us all of your insights. This has been great. If our listeners want to get in touch with you and learn more about you, what is the best way to do that?
Yeah, so thanks for asking. I did create a little page that people can visit if they want to just explore the various retail ways you can invest in real estate without having to like start a flipping company or something crazy like that. So if you go to thelandfixer.com, there's just a few videos of my ugly mug explaining the various different types of ways that you can, from a retail standpoint, just get money in a booming small sliver of the real estate investing industry.
That's cool. Thelandfixer.com. We will make sure we include that there in the show notes. Logan, thank you again for taking the time to come on today. I do appreciate it.
My pleasure. Have a good one.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.